I started my life in a part of Wales, a part of our capital city, which is what we describe as a deprived area, often in the headlines for the wrong reasons. Huge amounts of inequality, worklessness, high rates of teenage pregnancy, all of those sorts of things. First in my family to go to university, passionate about changing the lot of the people that I grew up with, so that where you're born shouldn't determine your future, but increasingly what we're talking about here is when you're born shouldn't sort of negatively determine your future. I was elected at the age of 21 with that as my sort of passion and mission. I've worked in or around political environments. I'm still passionate about how do we drive change. So the role of the First Future Generations Commissioner for me was an unprecedented opportunity to be able to do that. The Government of Wales and the Parliament of Wales was established in 1999 following a successful referendum to devolve power to Wales. The Government of Wales Act actually had a clause in it which said that sustainable development should be a central organising principle of the government. So that's a kind of lofty ambition. And what did it mean in practice? Absolutely nothing. It was very difficult to get the buy-in and the real focus from the Economy Minister, the Housing Minister, the Transport Minister. It was very much seen as the domain of the Environment Minister. And often as these things happen, it was around about 2010 where in Westminster and a new Conservative Lib Dem coalition were created. Now, it's also important to say Labour have always run the government in Wales back from 1999. They have always been left of centre. The second First Minister talked about, even when Labour was in power in Westminster, talked about a clear red water between the policies of Labour in Westminster and Labour in Wales. So much more progressive generally. And I think that has a big significance in terms of our ability to do some of these progressive things. So political opportunism, because the UK government previously under Labour had established a non-statutory sustainable development commission, a kind of advisory body to the government, and the new Conservative and Lib Dem coalition abolished that non-statutory sustainable development commission, which led Jane Davidson, the minister in question in Wales, to say, particularly because Wales always likes to have this clear red water between itself and Westminster, to say, not only will we not abolish our non-statutory sustainable development commission, we will put it on a statutory footing. We will also be more specific in that legislation about what we mean by sustainable development being a central organising principle for government, but also make it a central organising principle for the whole public sector in Wales. She then got a commitment from the then First Minister to put that in as an election pledge for the next election. She then retired from government. So the new government were left with this thing, the baby, if you like, of Jane Davidson, not really knowing what it was that they had signed up to. Just that one line, we will legislate for sustainable development. These things can go two ways, can't they? Either that means that no one picks it up, you know, nothing really happens, or there's a kind of absence or a vacuum and bright and brilliant people come in and fill that vacuum. And fortuitously in Wales, that is what happened. A bright team of civil servants looking at what might be possible, a big push from civil society, seeing the potential of this one line in, as an election pledge, which translated into a programme for government, and a push to for that to trigger, because the government didn't know what exactly it should mean, a national dialogue with the citizens of Wales, which was called The Wales We Want. So we posed the question to the citizens of Wales, what is the Wales you want to leave behind to your children, your grandchildren and future generations to come? And those citizens of Wales came up with what eventually became our seven long-term wellbeing goals, looking at what they said, what was happening at a UN, at an international level with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and bringing that down and localising that into our seven wellbeing goals, which is the vision that our country has set out for Wales. Their titles are probably nothing that you might not expect to see. So a prosperous Wales, a resilient Wales, and that's about ecological resilience, enhancing, restoring, maintaining nature and ecosystems, A Healthier Wales, which is about physical and mental health and well-being, maximising the conditions within which those that mental and physical health and well-being can thrive. A Wales of cohesive communities, safe, attracted, well-connected, vibrant communities. A More Equal Wales, a Wales of vibrant culture and thriving Welsh language, and a Globally Responsible Wales. I just want to pick out then a couple of those to perhaps give a little bit more detail. So first off, you might note if you come from a knowledge base around sustainable development, talk about sustainable development generally as a three-legged stool. It's about social, economic and environmental sustainability and well-being. We have a four-legged chair, if you like, in Wales, because we have that addition of culture, our culture, our heritage, our language. And that, I think, is an important addition and has actually been quite transformative in of itself. The other thing that was quite interesting, we started off with six wellbeing goals, and through the passage of the Act in Parliament, and the goal of a globally responsible Wales was added in. So this is really recognising, of course, that things that we do, you know, in Wales as a small nation, but predominantly in the global north, has these, you know, generally terrible knock-on consequences to poorer people in the global south. The other really interesting thing is the goal of a prosperous Wales. And I think this is the statutory definition of a prosperous Wales is a productive, innovative and low carbon society, one which uses resources efficiently and proportionately, including acting on climate change, and which develops a well-educated population with the skills to enable them to access decent work. So it's not a catchy definition, but it's a really exciting definition of prosperity. One, because of what it doesn't reference, GDP. Two, because it firmly puts prosperity in Wales within the context of planetary boundaries. It focuses on skills and it focuses on giving our population access to decent work or fair work, not just any old work. And so those are the kind of goals, the duties on all of our main public institutions, starting with 44 public institutions, all of our local councils, our health boards who are responsible for running all of our national healthcare system and services in Wales, our national organisations like our Environment Agency, our Public Health Agency, our national parks, and then significantly the Welsh Government itself. They must set objectives which maximise their contribution to all seven of those wellbeing goals. That means every one of those organisations must work beyond their traditional boundaries, if you like. The number of bodies covered has now gone up from 44 to 50 public institutions in Wales, with this vision for Wales being the objective that they all must seek to achieve. And the law then sets out this sort of toolkit, if you like, of how do we need to work differently in government and public service delivery and so on. It sets out five ways of working. So our public institutions must demonstrate how they've considered the long-term, you know, the long-term impact of the things that they are thinking of doing, and the long-term in terms of how they set objectives to maximise a contribution to all of those seven wellbeing goals. They must seek to prevent problems from occurring or from getting worse. They must integrate their actions. So these are duties to recognise the positive potential connections between each of those wellbeing goals. So, you know, we're not going to achieve our goal of a healthier Wales, for example, if the planet crashes and burns, because, you know, we'll all die. We're not going to either achieve the goal actually of a more prosperous Wales with access to decent work, because there are no jobs on a dead planet. Equally, we're not going to achieve our goal of a more equal Wales if we don't address the issues around health inequality which exist in Wales and so on. So that duty to think of things in an integrated way, then duties to collaborate, so to work together, and there are specific structures which are established by the law to require public institutions to do that, something called public services boards in each of our local authority areas or regions, and also to work together across the public sector, but also with the voluntary sector and the private sector, and then to involve citizens. And, you know, note that word is involve, not engage, consult. Involve is a deeper sense of co-production. And then it establishes an independent Future Generations Commissioner. And my job, I describe it often as both coach and referee, so powers to advise and support the institutions on the steps they should take to meet the wellbeing goals, and then duties to monitor and assess. The overarching kind of purpose of the Future Generations Commissioner is to be the guardian of the interests of the future generations of Wales and to encourage and monitor and assess the extent to which public bodies are taking account of the long term. So at a countrywide level, the act is, or the goals are measured by 50 national indicators. They're not a perfect set of indicators, because often indicators are things that we're sort of capable of measuring rather than things that we might want to measure. They do, however, have a number of the indicators relate back to the National Survey for Wales, which is interviews with a survey and interviews with people. So it does measure things like how many people feel that there's a sense of community in the area that they live. How many of you are volunteering? When did you last feel lonely? Those sorts of things. So they're the sort of softer measures, which I think are an important part, as well as the kind of, harder measures. In terms of, so there's a few things. So this has really come from the work of my office as commissioner. So first of all, we developed what we called a Future Generations framework. So for different types of decisions that governments might take. So for infrastructure, for example, if you're deciding what infrastructure a country might need, how would you apply a Future Generations Act lens to that? Likewise, if you're looking at policy or service delivery, how might you apply a Future Generations lens to that? Perhaps I can just, and I'll go on to the maturity matrix in just a moment. Perhaps I can just kind of give a live, a real example of how that worked in practice. So the first big test of the legislation was the government had plans which had been on their books for a long period of time, hadn't come into fruition, but they were just in 2017 started to proceed with a plan to deal with the problem of congestion on one of our major motorways by spending the entire of the government's borrowing capacity on building a 13-mile stretch of motorway as a kind of relief road to deal with this problem of congestion. Mm-hmm. So that, I was sort of a year, less than a year into post. Just starting work on this framework for infrastructure, and this particular decision had sort of accelerated that. So using the development of this framework on how they should apply the act to that decision, I asked them to explain, well, how they'd done it, how they'd considered long-term trends, what metrics and data they'd used to consider in terms of prevention, how they were looking at things in an integrated way and so on, but particularly how they were applying the wellbeing goals. So how they considered that goal of prosperity. As you can imagine, this was played out as this road is essential for our economic prosperity. And in fact, the Conservative Secretary of State, who had a role in releasing these funds for the Welsh Government to borrow, said that this congestion was a foot on the throat of the economy in Wales, and therefore it needed to be built. All well and good, I disagree with him, but actually, the law says the definition of prosperity is productive, innovative, low carbon, using resources efficiently and proportionately and acting on climate change. I then asked them to explain how it was in line with the goal of a resilient Wales. It was going through a nature reserve. Our environment body said there would be irreparable damage to that nature reserve and nature and biodiversity. How it was in line with the goal of a healthier Wales, because we have illegal levels of air pollution, we have increasing rates of obesity, what trends are they taking into account there? How it was in line with the goal of a more equal Wales, because 25% of the lowest income families don't own a car. So are you seriously proposing to spend the entire of the country's borrowing capacity on a programme that's only going to benefit the already better off? And it was really interesting because it went to a public inquiry, and the inspector at the public inquiry recommended that it should still go ahead. That's back to what I was talking about there. Even when you start to change the system and culture within government, you've still got all these other organisations that play a role whose culture has not necessarily changed. But following those interventions, which were played out very, very publicly as a spat, if you like, a fight between the commissioner and the government, the First Minister changed his mind. He cancelled the road building scheme, and he set up a commission to instead look at, and the terms of reference to the commission were based around the wellbeing goals and the Future Generations Act. What is the solution to this congestion problem which best meets the seven wellbeing goals? So those are the kind of requirements of the Act, and that framework sets out the sorts of things that bodies should think of and apply to demonstrate that they've applied the Act to their decision making. The maturity matrix is a sort of next iteration of that, if you like. So the Commissioner has powers to, under Section 20 of the Act, to undertake reviews. Those are, I suppose, the toughest powers of the Commissioner, because the Commissioner can't force anyone to do anything or stop anyone doing anything. They can call out, they can commission research, they can convene people, you know, so on and so on. The Section 20 review powers gives the Commissioner powers to go into a particular organisation and review a particular decision or a way in which they're operating. The Commissioner can make recommendations which the public body either have to follow, or if they don't follow, they have to publish their reasons why they're not following those recommendations and what it is they're going to do instead. So it's kind of name and shame powers, if you like. So one of my last acts, if you like, was to really go into government with the exam question: how well is the machinery of government embedding the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act in the way that it operates? Because what we've seen across Wales is some massively transformational policy initiatives, the universal basic income, following that the motorway issue, a moratorium on road building in Wales, transformation of our school curriculum, commitments around zero waste and a range of other things. But I could not be assured that every decision in government was applying the Future Generations Act in the way that our civil service was going about doing that. So what we looked at is what was happening in terms of the people and culture element of applying the Act in government, what was happening in terms of process, and what was happening in terms of their role as public sector leaders. And from that, we agreed a joint improvement plan with the government, which sets out what we call a maturity matrix, which is an assessment really of where on the journey the government, and it could be used by any public sector organisation actually, where in the journey on those three topics they are. So are they right at the beginning where there's no evidence that they're properly applying the Act? Or are they sort of being a bit more adventurous in how they might apply it? Or are they really kind of leading the way? And it takes us through each of those five ways of working and says, so for example, on prevention, you know, one of the things we say is you need to understand the root causes of the issues that you're dealing with. So, you know, we'd see no evidence as being, you know, no understanding and challenges are viewed in isolation. We'd see being a bit more adventurous as research, perhaps they might have commissioned research to understand causality. We might see big challenges considered across an organisation. And then we'd see leading the way in this area as a clear plan to tackle root causes of issues, and all challenges are considered and acted upon in a system wide way. So what it enables a commissioner to do, or anyone to do really, and for government themselves to use it, is to see how do they move from no evidence to making simple changes to being a bit better, and then actually getting to where we want to in terms of leading the way.